At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hi, it's Annie here. Just before today's podcast, let me tell you about the Her Spirit community. The Her Spirit community provides a fun, safe and supportive space for every woman to get fitter, stronger and healthier. So download the app today, which is free until the end of June.
Hello, welcome back everybody to the Her Spirit podcast, and thank you so much for everybody who is downloading, because we know that lots of you are and we really appreciate it. Annie Emerson, my lovely co-presenter, me, Louise Minchin from the BBC Breakfast Red Sofa, normally talking about other things. This is my favourite bit of the week, Annie. How are you doing?
I'm okay. And I love that this is your favourite part of the week, because it's all a bit serious on the red sofa, isn't it? So let's come away from that and take a look at this week. Great. A bit like you, all good. Training, sunshiny. We're doing fine.
And today we are recording our first podcast as I get delivered a glass of rosé to me. Our first podcast on a Friday night with wine. I've never worked with wine in my hand before, Annie. So that's good. And I'm really excited this week because I'm inspired by, you know, this, what I've loved about this, there's so many inspiring conversations, but I'm back swimming, back in the cold water.
Brilliant, darling. And I mean, it is, I have to say, I mean, you've been good at it for a long time. I'm a bit of a wuss, it has to be said, but this for me, these podcasts that we've been doing have been quite life-changing. And that might sound like a little bit of an exaggeration. I tell you, it's not. I'm in that water, no wetsuit. Okay, we're a little bit warmer maybe down here, down south, and a lake, and it's going to be water warmer than a river or the sea. I'm in that water without a wetsuit. Last night, I did about 1,700 last night, no wetsuit. Little bit chilly when I got out, but I loved every moment of it.
And there's two things, isn't there, with that? So I've been thinking quite a lot about it from our conversations and also other things. So there's two things for me. I keep hearing over and over again from people we've talked to, other people, that that cold water is really good for stress. Okay, so I had quite a lot of anxiety last week. I think we're 10 weeks in, you know, we're probably all feeling a little bit anxious. And also for menopause. So I'm doing an experiment. I've been in the cold water, I think, 7 days in a row. I'm not going to give any verdicts yet. But I am enjoying it. And also what we're trying to do, just to remind people who are not part of the Her Spirit kind of community as yet, I know lots of you are listening, and what we're trying to do is donate all our minutes that we're doing exercise, aren't we? So people can get free access to the app where there's loads of brilliant things about how to learn how to run. There's cycling group, there's yoga, there's everything. A menopause group as well. So we're donating our minutes, aren't we, Annie, as is everybody else, so we can give the app free to other people.
Yeah, I mean, what an amazing opportunity. Really exciting. And I think, you know, these times have been very interesting. We've learned a lot over the last 10 weeks. I think a lot of us personally have kind of revisited, thought about different things about how we can, you know, improve our lives and stuff. What's been interesting, I think slightly worrying, though, is I think that, you know, possibly, you tell me if I'm wrong, Lou, but the woman's role has been quite vital in these times in terms of running the home a lot, because a lot of that does fall on the women. You know, you quite often have, you know, both parents
teaching
and running the home, the washing, the cleaning, the whole everything that's going on. I personally know I've trained a bit less than when we're not in lockdown, and the numbers out there are saying that there's been a 7% decline in women's activity, which I think is a little bit disappointing. And I think all the more reason for people to take a look at the brilliant Her Spirit app and see all the, you know, possible classes that you can take part in: yoga, strength, HIIT, Pilates, cycling. It's all there, and you can do it at home.
I think what I've learned, so many things in the last few weeks, more than ever, and I knew this before we started, and this is why we're doing this podcast. I knew how good exercise was for my confidence levels, for dealing with all sorts of different stresses. And I, even more than ever before, I know that this is my go-to. Like today I've been in the river for 10 minutes. Actually I had the first, my gosh, what an exciting day, because we're now allowed to. I went for a bike ride with a friend. I saw a friend for the first time in over 2.5 months. And that, you know, you just begin to realize how really important it is to me personally, and I think to other people as well.
And it's appreciating those friendships. And this is kind of a strange thing, but I think we've learned a lot about who are our friends and who aren't our friends, and who do we want to hang out with and who don't we want to hang out with. And that can be quite hard for people, but it's not a bad thing either.
It's not a bad thing. We also know we can hang out on Zoom, Annie. It's been brilliant. Right. Should we introduce our fantastic guest?
Oh, we are. Oh my God. Just amazing. Honestly, I cannot believe what this woman has achieved in her 36 years. She is absolutely, oh my God, I'm not worthy. That's what I feel like when I look at her CV.
Okay. I first met the wonderful Helen Skelton, who we're going to speak to in a second, a while back when she was a Blue Beater presenter back in the day. And even then, she was so striking for, first of all, her enthusiasm and her incredible bravery. But the reason why we've asked her on this week is that we've both been addicted to watching SAS Who Dares Wins, which I've been calling DIY SAS, which obviously it isn't. Helen Skelton, you are an incredibly brave woman. Well done.
I tell you what, I'm never going to get out of this building. My head's going to be so big after you two, isn't it? No, do you know what? It's one of those things that I think, not to be all bra burny about it, but I think women just get on with things. And what I really enjoyed about that show was the reaction that people were like, oh my God, you just did it. And there was like Nikki and Lauren and Anthea Turner and Yasmin. And there were so many women that I think surprised people. And I was like, what's surprising that we're just getting on with it and not telling you how amazing we are? We're just doing it.
So what was interesting, Helen, for me in the final, I dipped in and out of the programme previously, but I was astounded that at the end of it, it was, you know, three women against two, which I think when you think of how tough it is physically, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? But it goes to show the mental strength that is needed to be able to succeed in the programme.
People watch the teleprogramme, they go, oh my days, it's brutal and it's intense. And it is, but it's more intense than it looks because of the mental side. Like for me, I didn't mind the falling backwards out of helicopters. I knew that that would be quite cool and I'd be quite pleased to show my kids at some point. But for me, it was the anxiety of never knowing what was coming next. And like, you never know what they've got in store for you. And you guys saw us doing the challenges and the tasks, but you quite often run 5K to it, or they'd quite often make you run up a hill and say, run to Aunt Middleton. And then as soon as you get to Aunt Middleton, he'd move. And so it was that whole thing of you never know what's going to happen. And that's what I found the hardest.
So quite a lot is cut then from what the viewer actually sees in each programme each week.
I think the viewer probably sees 10% of what goes on. And that's not a criticism of the programme. Like the people who make that programme are amazing. Like I've been making telly programmes for, you know, 15 years. And the crew on that are as fit as the contestants, because they're chasing after us with kit and trying to film us. And they're going off cliffs with ropes filming us. So the production's amazing, but because so much happens in that time, you only see as a viewer 10% of it.
Okay, so we only saw 10%, and that 10% looked utterly brutal, terrifying. And let's just talk about the physicality of it, because there you are, and I don't know how much you weigh, but you're not 12 stone and a boxer, are you? And you're lifting people on your shoulders. I mean, it's just, you know, that is really hard.
I had to carry Brendan. And obviously he's not as heavy as Tony, but he's so tall that he was so awkward to carry. But God love Brendan. I mean, he was the best team player ever. And he was going, right, Helen, you need to hold me like this and do this. Because obviously he's a dancer. So he knew how he should get on my back so that I had the best chance of carrying him. Yeah, the physicality is brutal. But things like, I think we all know that if you have a good night's sleep, you can cope with anything. But you never get a full night's sleep there, because what you don't see is we have to go on watchtower every night. So every night you stand on the top of a watchtower just on survey.
No.
You're in pairs. So you do 2 hours, then you swap. Then you do 2 hours and you swap. So you never sleep for more than 2 hours, because you've got to get up, pack up your sleeping bag, pack up your Bergen, climb the watchtower, stand up there in November in 3 a.m. and all that.
And so how long are you there for in total?
The others all went 36 hours before me, but because my kids are so little, I wanted to go as late as possible. So I sort of went straight up there and went straight into it. And in total, I was there 9 days.
And how much training did you do for it? Because presumably you knew a bit about what you might be asked to do.
Yeah, and actually, and people think this is kind of me making an excuse, but I trained a lot with the kids. So I'd had a really... In my kind of work, you're busy for a month and then you're off for a month and you're busy for a month and off for a month. But I was the busiest month of the year leading up to it. But I trained a lot with the kids. Like I'd walk to school with one on my shoulders and one on my back. And as it turned out, that was the best training ever because I had hardly done any gym work. I trained a bit at David Lloyd's and the guy there who watched the series loved it. And he was like, do a bit of this, do a bit of that. But I trained outside a lot, went on a lot of hill walks. I'm from the Lake District, so I love that sort of thing anyway. But trained with a backpack, used to walk up Otley Shevin. And what was funny, when we got there, all the young guns, because they're all 10 years younger than me, were all going on about how many sessions they did a day. And straight away, thought, oh, I'm going to be the weakest here. But very quickly, I was like, no, I think I'm going to be all right. My goal was always to stay on Lauren Steadman and keep her in my sights. And yeah, I managed to do that.
And talking about Lauren, I mean, she was, and hopefully, I mean, fingers crossed we can talk to her as well. She was, both of you, just made of steel, but in a really, just kind of non-aggressive way. Do you sort of mean that's what was so inspiring to watch you all, actually, all the women on board. It was just fantastic.
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy, and happy because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Lauren is, I mean, I think on day two, one of the producers, and they phone you after it and they're editing it and they tell you what's going to be in so that you're prepared, because obviously some of it's quite personal. And they said to me, apparently I was just wandering around muttering to myself, Lauren's just my favourite human ever. And I very early looked at her and I thought, the rest of us were breaking down. She was getting stronger. She said at one point, and I mean this in the most unpatronising way, because when she said it, it reminded me of how I used to be when I was 26 and in the midst of all those Blue Peter challenges. We came back from one of the challenges. Everyone was broken. And Lauren went, this is good. This is what we need. More pain is going to get us better prepared for what's to come. And I looked at her and I thought, you are going to destroy this course. The bloke, like, Tony, everyone was broken. And Lauren was like, bring it on.
Watching you in the final, where did you get that ability? Because Louise and I have chatted about this and we've both concluded that there is no way we would have been able to tolerate someone shouting at us the way you were shouted at. We would have kind of slightly lost the plot. But I was interested in the look on your face because it was very serene. It was this slight smile, but not too much. And you just kept looking forward and you just kept taking what they were giving you and you didn't crack. I mean, how on earth did you do that?
I think my downfall, or maybe the thing that kept me in there, was that I've always sort of thought you either smile or you either laugh or you cry. And I've always felt like that. Like in anything that's difficult, I've always thought, oh, you either laugh or you cry. And I quite often got the smirks and got the giggles because that's just my way of coping. which, I mean, I do not advise that anybody do that, because that is not a way to win Ant Middleton over. Like, at one point, one of the, they gave us this big rabbling speech about, right, this is going to get worse, this is going to get awful, this is going to be teams, this is going to separate the wheat from the chaff and all this. And I was convinced they were going to do boys versus girls. And so I couldn't contain my giggling, and they pulled me to one side and they're like, what's so funny? And I was just like, I was just waiting for them to pitch like Tony against Lauren and me against Lockie and all that. But I think in the interrogation, you've going through such a horrible situation with the noises, which are deafening, and the stress positions, which are awful, that by the time you get to the interrogation, it's almost like light relief, because it's a break from the noises. So it's horrible, but also you're kind of thinking, if I'm putting up with that, I can get through this. This is just a conversation.
So going back to the beginning, or some of it. So when for example, you had the noises in your head and you have them shouting at you and breaking you down mentally, is there a place that you go to, or were you just, what were you thinking even?
I was trying to play games and think, I was going through the alphabet and like trying to do a country for each letter, but that's the kind of thing that I would normally use as a coping strategy. But to be honest, the noises are so deafening and the pain is constant, because sitting on the floor cross-legged and standing with your hands on the wall doesn't look that bad, but doing it for 12 hours, it's agony. And every time you move, they come and like stretch out your arms and knee you in the back and bend your shoulders, and it's just to constantly annoy you. And yeah, I mean, I constantly was thinking about what I was going to say next time he interrogated me. And that's why I was frustrated, because I was giving away little bits. I just didn't give away enough. And in my head, the next time I went in, I was going to say like a big chunk more. I'd sort of practiced in my head what I was going to say.
Justine has just asked us, utmost respect, she says, for getting as far as you did on SAS Who Dares Wins. Did your mind play tricks with you during the interrogation, she asks?
100%. So the briefing that they'd given us, so they were saying, right, you're going to the interrogation, and they warned us of all the tricks. So they kept saying, don't say yes or no, or if you say yes or no, that'll be played back to the other recruits and they'll make out you struck a deal. Don't sign anything, it'll be played back to the other recruits and they'll make out you struck a deal. Don't agree to this, that and the other. So in your head, you're primed for them having tricked the other recruits into saying stuff. So you're constantly thinking, who's going to rat me out? They know what to do to play you off against each other. So what they did with me was they showed me, I had the hood on, and they let me hear Lockie say, I'm doing military training. But Lockie looked so cold and I was so worried about him. They knew what they were doing, because they knew I'd be like, no, he doesn't mean it. He doesn't mean it. He doesn't mean it. Not even thinking about your own game plan. I was like, don't leave him alone. Don't hurt him. Whereas I think in my head, I was a bit like, I'm going to do whatever Lauren does. So if I get the indication that she's told them, I'm going to tell them.
I love that you followed Lauren. I mean, Annie and I both work with Lauren, because Lauren Stedman is a fantastic para triathlete, isn't she, Annie? We know her well. And she's always got, you know, watching her, there's always been something, you know, about her, hasn't there?
I think with Lauren, what I've learned, and it didn't surprise me until right till the end, that how she kind of kept it together. You know, she's obviously, you know, a pretty sharp lady. But when you listen to her kind of life story and her, I wouldn't even say coping mechanisms, because it doesn't affect her. She is such an incredibly strong woman. But I think her intelligence really came through in the end, didn't it? That ability to kind of really keep it together and read what was required of her kind of meant that she went on, I guess, to win the programme.
And that was evident from early doors. Like early doors, the way, yeah, I was really frustrated that I kind of, you know, I gave away stuff but not enough, and so of course I'm frustrated to make it that far and not make it right over the final hurdle. But very early on I thought Lauren deserves to win this for her approach, because it would be so easy to like not say the elephant in the room. Like, she's got one hand, and I think when she first rocked up everyone was like, okay, let's see how this goes. But within half an hour it wasn't even a thing. It was just like, you don't mention that about Lauren because it's so irrelevant, because she would be well within her rights to approach things differently, because, you know, we were carrying water cans. We've got two hands, she's got one. Like, it would be so easy to make excuses for her, but it's just not relevant. Like, it's just, she is such a poster girl for, you can do anything.
Oh, we've all got a huge, I mean, respect for all of you, to be honest with you. There's so many questions coming in for you. For example, and this one is from Kirsty, and I'll ask this about your about the challenge in a second. She says, first of all, how has your mindset changed since having your boys? So let's take, so you've got two little boys, haven't you? Why? What did they, I mean, you know, they're young, but why did you want as a mum, and I've done this lots of different times, to go and do this? Is it to show them what you can do?
And to show myself. Like, the best thing that ever happened to me was having my boys. But when I had my first son, I changed a bit because life is different. And, you know, when you go somewhere with child. But when you have two sons in very quick succession, everything's different. Because, you know, when I had one son, I still travelled the world and I went all over with Ernie. And then Louis came along and I was like, hang on a minute, it's not as easy to go with two. And I tried. I took them to Portugal by myself. And I remember my friend saying, you're going with a 1 and a 2-year-old by yourself to Portugal. Why would you do that? And I think because I wanted to sort of think life wasn't any different. And of course it's different. And so it should be. I think it's just hard when you've spent so long like building your identity and finding your confidence and building your career, all of a sudden everything changes, and so it should. And I think I just wanted it for a bit of confidence for myself.
So this is interesting, Helen, because, you know, when not all the people that watched the SAS Who Dares Win, and so they won't know your background and what you achieved prior to having children. I mean, just to name one of them, you kayak solo from Peru to Brazil, a 3,230-kilometre journey solo that sent you into the Guinness Book of Records, because one for the solo and longest, and the second for the furthest distance covered in 24 hours by a woman. So I'm going, what the hell have you got to prove? But I guess what you're saying is, this is post babies. What am I capable of as a mother?
Yeah. And I think my kids, I mean, they're just the epitome of characters. They are those kids that everyone goes, oh, they're spirited. Oh, you've got your hands full. Yes, they are. They will be up a tree in the blink of an eye. They will be crossing a river and jump. I mean, yesterday, my 3-year-old was jumping off rocks into a river. He can't swim. You know, they're willful and they're brilliant. But of course, sometimes as a mum, I think nothing brings your heart so much joy but brings you to your knees as quickly as kids do. And I just needed something that I was like, you know what? Yeah, I can bring something to the table. In my head, when I first had kids, they were going to eat organic snacks, never have an iPad, play 10 musical instruments, speak Chinese. And obviously, that's not how it pans out. And so I think for me, I know it sounds stupid, but I wanted to do something and be like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm good at something. Yeah, I can contribute. I can do something.
I think, I mean, there's so many things about, first of all, I mean, who do they take after when they're jumping off rocks? There is, you know, it's kind of obvious. That's one thing. But also, there is something, isn't there, about, and lots of us will have been through this, and it's your identity changes, doesn't it? And it's all important in whatever way you can, I think, to remember that you are still that same person, even though at this point in your life, there are different priorities, which are really important and equally fulfilling, and wouldn't change it for anything. But you've got to try and remember that you are still that same person that did those crazy things and went down the Amazon.
And you've put that so eloquently, because I would never want anybody to think that I take any of the adventures I have with my kids for granted. I don't at all. I think for me, having kids, it doesn't clip your wings. It just gives you a different type of adventure to take. And it, like you say, you've got different priorities. But when they asked me to do this, I mean, the first time they asked me last year, and I was like, no, because the kids were too little and I didn't want to leave them, because I don't like going away from them overnight. But the other thing was, it was the first time ever that I left my husband in charge, because I'm in charge and I do all the parenting, and not, he's a hands-on dad, but do you know what I mean? Like, I'm the one that does breakfast, dinner and tea and all the rest of it. So to leave him in charge for a week was a bit of we needed to do it. It was good for both of us.
So that is also a kind of a leap of faith, isn't it, in some ways? That,
yeah.
You know, you've got to do that. And what a brilliant thing to do, because I'm sure for them, all of them, they've had a different experience, have a different relationship because you did that.
And it's made him appreciate me, like, in the same way. And not this makes him sound bad before, I don't mean it like that, but I think it's very easy if you're the one going out to work to come in and go, have you not cleaned up the breakfast dishes yet? And as you're the mum that's been fending the kids all day, that makes you want to punch them. You're like, what? never mind the breakfast dishes, I'm in for a pee by myself. And so the flip side of that has been really good because he now gets that.
I think that what's been interesting about the last 10 weeks or so is, you know, we all thought we'd be incredibly productive and do all these brilliant things. And actually, I can't say it's a disaster. A lot of us have been very lucky because of the weather and we've been able to get outside. But we're just kind of surviving at the moment, aren't we? And it actually goes to show that it's quite hard to run a house and run kids and also achieve on top of that. And we shouldn't, as women, kind of beat ourselves up about it. We just shouldn't.
The running a house thing, I'm always like, why is the washing gets done, but the washing pile, the clean stuff never gets put away. What is that?
Oh my God, what is that? It piles up, doesn't it? And that's the worst bit. You can get it in the washing machine, you can get it dried. Can you get it back in those drawers and cupboard? No.
There's a pile, which is up to my elbow upstairs. And we should say to everybody, we're recording this 7 o'clock on a Friday night. Annie and I are drinking, are you drinking rosé, Annie?
Yeah, I've got a little glass of rosé. Yeah.
Helen's way more sensible than us. She's not drinking anything. And after this, I should maybe have another glass of rosé and go and attack the pile. But the pile doesn't get smaller, does it?
Just keeps growing.
Helen would be drinking rosé if she didn't have to drive for an hour. I swear to God, I tell you what I have brought back. Someone said to me, in lockdown, we've gone back to using our cars like in the 1950s. And I said, I've created cocktail hour at like 5 o'clock. I have a gin and tonic every night. I'm like, is that acceptable? Am I allowed to do that?
Oh, of course it's acceptable. You can ask me, Helen. I can give you the answer to that. Lou knows how I'm going to answer that. Absolutely. Whatever it takes to get you through.
My mum keeps saying, it's a bad route to go down, Helen. Stop having a gin and tonic. I'm like, why? It's a great route.
So to finish off the conversation about, for example, before I've kind of thought in my head, I'd really, you know, I'd love the challenge, the physical challenge of SAS. Having seen it, there is no way because of the mental, the bullying, etc. So two questions. The first one is the easier one to answer in some ways. What have you taken away from it? What have you learned about yourself?
I think for me, it was a massive learning curve in being all right with not being the best. And I don't mean that to be a martyr, but normally, like, I would go and do this stuff and I would expect myself to be at the front and to be the strongest and to be winning everything. And I didn't. And not only was I all right about that, but I was really happy. Like, I saw Lauren smashing stuff and I was thrilled for her. And it makes me sound like a bit of a competitive psycho, I think. But in my head, I was like, oh my God, I'm really all right about that. Like, in my 20s, I was a bit like, I really wanted to be the best and the most successful and all the rest of it. Whereas I actually just really enjoyed watching other people who didn't think they could do stuff. And, you know, I was crazy proud of Jack Maynard. Didn't last that long. And so his story sort of went a bit under the radar. But Jack Maynard's a blogger. This SAS was his idea of hell. He could not be more polar opposite to Tony Bellew. And, I mean, he won't mind me saying, he kept trying to leave. And I was like, no, you're going nowhere. And that, bless him, every time he kept going into the doctor's room to like hand him his number, I was like, get yourself back here. And I think, for me, I just really enjoyed playing that role.
And second question, which is probably you may not want to answer, who was the most annoying?
As a DS or as a person? In
both.
The
both.
Let's have both.
But I love Tony, but I was really annoyed that he kept... So by the end of it, I know he kept seeing us at the toilet, which was weird. It was so stressful by the end. Nobody had time to go to the toilet because as soon as you went to the toilet, they'd be like, get on the parade square, right? If you're not on the parade square, you've got to do 5 minutes of crawling around on your hands and knees. So everyone started peeing and pooing in a bucket in the corner of the mess. But for some reason, they do it and then leave it. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, Tony, I should not have to, I don't need to clean up your shit. And so literally Lockie would be like, I'm so sorry you had to deal with that, Helen. I'm like, can we all just deal with our own pee in the bucket, please? So that annoyed me.
Oh, wow. You should have seen our faces. You see, this is the thing. If they'd showed us, you know, they've showed us 10%. I mean, we don't even have an idea of how bad it was, do we?
But that sounds like the more interesting stuff, right? The stuff that the real nitty gritty, the truth of what goes on behind those closed doors.
And what's really funny is that because of lockdown at the minute, everybody's doing Instagram lives all the time and stuff comes out like this all the time. And I think the PR and the production team are like, oh my God, what are they going to say next? Because there was like a moment where Foxy said to me on an Instagram live, I don't know why they made out you failed that water thing. You didn't do any different to anyone else. And then he's like, I'm not meant to say that, am I? But I was like, because of Instagram live, everyone is like saying all that stuff. Or there was things that happened that you couldn't ever talk about because it was bad, like really bad.
So the water exercise that you're talking about, that I have to say looked pretty horrific. So it was where you were lined up and you had to get into the water and for 5 minutes dunk under the water and come back up again, didn't you, holding your breath?
So you had your hands cable tied together and they said get in and you sink down and jump up and sink down and jump up. Now this is when the tiredness effect creeps in. I go outdoor swimming. Like I joined the Leeds Bradford Triathlon Group. I go to Otley Lake and I swim. So I thought, if you'd asked me before, I would have thought I'd be absolutely fine with that. But when we got there, I was like, oh, I don't want to do this. And as soon as you say that, that's it. They're all on you. So they're like, get in. So they cable tied my hands, got in. I couldn't really do it, but I did it in this. It's just the trouble. As soon as I got out, once they've spotted a crack, they're into you. So like, oh, that was terrible. You did it wrong. And it's that whole confidence thing. It's to see how you react.
And how cold was the water, Helen? Because it looked bloody freezing.
Yeah, I mean, it was November in the Scottish Highlands.
What temperatures are we talking about? I mean, it's got to be single, very low figures, just about, hasn't it?
I mean, about 8 or 7. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Around, it wasn't good.
The other thing, yeah, on that point, exactly on that point. So, I mean, you just look so cold. I mean, I deal terribly with the cold. How did you deal with that even?
Because you never get the chance to warm up because when you go into camp, you have two sets of clothes and obviously you get in and out of water and in and out of the sea and then you get changed on the side. And so you put your wet stuff back in the bag and then you get back to that little barn and we had a log burner to try and dry it. So you never dry your stuff out.
Honestly, I'm absolutely staggered by watching it, to be honest with you. You say you learned that it's okay not to be first, but you must have learned. I mean, the stuff you went through must give you a kind of a little pocket in your brain of resilience, which you will be able to use for the rest of your life.
But if I cast my mind back to the hardest things that I've done, the hardest thing I ever did was the Namibian ultramarathon. So I'm not a runner, but I signed up to do this 80 miles in the desert in 24 hours. And the physical and mental pain of that was, I mean, I was hallucinating. My blisters were so bad. Every time I put my feet on the ground, it was like stepping on razor blades. It was the worst, most horrific thing ever. But I remember what kept me going was one of the doctors on the crew came along and went, oh, well, you've got further than we thought. And I found out that the production crew had all put a bet on when I'd drop out. Not if I'd finish, when I drop out. So that was the best thing ever because it made me then lick on and finish. But it was the worst. It was awful. Like, I was literally crying with every step that I took. Even when I watch it now on YouTube, I cry because it's so awful. And that was my reference point. And I kept thinking on SAS, if I get to that bad, that's when I'll hand in my number. And the time when I did get, the one time I thought I'd have to hand in my number was carrying the kayak up the hill because it was so physically painful. And when you fell to the floor, you couldn't get up. Like, you literally could not get off your knees because it was so physically painful to get up off your knees because it was so heavy. And that was the point when I thought, if I can get to the top of this hill, I can cope with anything.
And you did.
And I think probably, like, I mean, you guys must have the same mindset, otherwise you wouldn't do what you do, in that sometimes challenges are good training for life. Like, life throws all kinds of stuff that you don't want to deal with. You know, we're all women of a certain age who've been through relationships and children and job stuff and life stuff. And bad stuff happens that breaks your heart and breaks your mind. And I think challenging yourself makes you know you can cope with it.
And that's exactly what my point was, I suppose, was exactly that. You've banked an amazing thing, not just in Namibia but I mean, particularly what you've done recently, which you can use. And I suppose that's the kind of thing that, Annie, we've been talking about over the last few months, isn't it? What can we do physically that can prepare us mentally for all those things that you don't know that are going to happen to you?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think that it's almost like you need that reminder that you can delve into, because I think it's interesting listening to Helen talk and, you know, pre-babies, post-babies. And it's almost like you didn't quite remember all the things that you'd achieved before. I mean, for goodness sakes, 80 miles in the Namibian desert. I mean, I'm a runner. I love running. That sounds like 23 hours, 45 minutes you took, didn't you? So you were just 15 minutes in under the cutoff. I mean, I'm almost slightly breathless talking about it. And my running, as Lou knows, my running is my huge passion, you know. But wow. I think, Lou, the interesting thing to find out about Helen would be, okay, so go back 36 years ago. You're born into in Cumbria, in a dairy farm. You grew up in a dairy farm. So where did this adventurer come from? You know, was it, you know, life, you know, quite harsh, the weather, you know, being on a farm, you know, did it grow in you or was it always there?
No, I don't know. It's funny because I think often when you hear, like, and particularly with SAS, you know, you hear a lot of really inspiring stories of people who've had, you know, awful childhoods and maybe been let down by people and they've overcome it. And that's amazing. And it's such a lesson we can all learn from. But if anything, my childhood was so boring. Like, I couldn't have asked for a more famous five childhood. I grew up on a farm in the Lake District with my brother, who's possibly one of the nicest men on the planet. My mum, you know, she was born to be a mum. She took us here, there and everywhere at all times. And my dad was a farmer, so I could, like, see my dad whenever I wanted. I think my childhood was very famous five, you know. The one thing I always got taught was you get out of life what you put in. Like, if you want excitement, you've got to make it. If you want adventure, you've got to make it. If you want the dream life, you've got to build it. And I think that was always a really good lesson for me. But yeah, no, it's funny because people think, I mean, I went to school with Leo Holding, who's the amazing rock climber, like the coolest rock climber, you know, one of the world leading rock climbers. But aside from that, people think, so I grew up in this adventurous community. My mum is scared of lifts. She's not an adventurous person at all. Like, my dad plays golf, but that's it. I once remember running the New York Marathon, and halfway through, I phoned my mum and I was like, I don't think I can do it, mum. I'm struggling. And she went, oh, never mind. Just, like, she literally was like, never mind, just go shopping. And I was like, that's the kind of family I'm from. They're not like, you must do this.
And I love that, because you kind of, you know, presume, don't you, that you have sort of competitive parents that might push you along. But you see, the thing is that you do stuff that people listening, you know, like, for example, the kayaking down the Amazon. I mean, that's just extraordinary. You have a bravery in you that most of us, and I include myself in this, do not have. I mean, I'd love the idea of it, but gosh, you know, so when you're given the opportunity to do that, do you just say, yeah, I'm in, or what happens?
It's a fine line between brave and stupid, isn't it? I think for me, I'm impulsive. So I don't think things through. Like, I think of the big, I think I'm definitely a positive person. So, like, I see the good bit before the bad bit. I mean, like, my brother always takes a mick out of me because he's like, he thinks my catchphrase is, oh, he's a lovely person. And I say that about situations. So, like, you know, my brother's always like, you could be in a war zone and go, lovely sunset though. Like, he knows that I always see the positive in stuff. And I think, for me, when I joined Blue Peter, you know, I'd been a journalist in the newsroom and worked on Newsround, and then I got to Blue Peter and I just saw it as a massive, massive opportunity. And they said to me, do you want to do a challenge? And I thought, well, if we're going to do it, we may as well make it as big as we can. And if we've got this opportunity, let's do it as big, as bold as we can. And I think the reality was, with all of that stuff, the more people said, oh, she can't row the Amazon, or she can't walk on a high wire, or she can't cycle to South Pole, the more people told me I couldn't do it, the more I wanted to do it. And as soon as someone told me I couldn't do it, I wanted to attack it.
Right, you see, there you've got me, because I completely now beginning to understand you, because you're right. As soon as somebody says I can't be beaten by a girl, I'm like, right, you want to see it? There's nothing like in life being underestimated, is there?
And to give Ant Middleton his credit, in SAS on the wire thing, that really frustrated me, because I've done that kind of stuff to high wire training, so I know I can get back on it. And as I was going up to it, he was going, you'll never do this. And with hindsight, I was like, oh, now I know why he was doing it.
Because he knows that would make, should have made you do it.
Yeah. And I attacked it. I just, I would have been happier walking on it than crawling on it. That was the issue.
So, I mean, obviously those guys would have seriously done their homework. Whilst it's a programme, those guys still come from a very serious background. So I'm guessing they thoroughly knew who you were. Or do you think you taught them something that they didn't know about Helen Skelton?
I don't know. It's weird because you don't, you're so disconnected from them and you're a bit scared because you never know what they're going to do. I think after it came out, they've sort of said to me they were surprised. They didn't, I think, to be honest, and they said it to me in there, they had me down as sort of Margot from The Good Life, bumbling along on Countryfile and with my kids and, you know, playing in rivers and walking around fields. And that's genuinely the pigeonhole they had me in. And I think they were, I mean, I don't know about Ant because I haven't spoken to him, but I've spoken to Ollie and Foxy and they were both like, oh yeah, we were really surprised at how fit you were. Which to me, I was a bit like, oh, but I thought I had previous in that, but maybe to them, I didn't.
I think fitness, it's a very important thing. You know, I'm not underestimating that in terms of preparation you might need for something. But quite a lot of it is mental. And I fundamentally believe that people are more capable both physically and mentally. And I'm not saying, oh, you've trained for a marathon for 9 months or you could have gone 15 minutes faster in a marathon. What I'm saying is on a day-to-day level, we could be thrown challenges that we could say, no, we can't do that. I'm not capable, when we very much are, particularly women. And I guess I think their power, it's not just physical power, but it's a mental power. And I think that's where you excelled in SAS.
I think for me and for Nikki, we just wanted to get on with it and like get it done. And I think sometimes there was like, as I say, that's why I found the mental side a bit more stressful, when they'd be like, oh, put yourself at the front of the queue. Who thinks they're the strongest? Put yourself at the back of the queue. Who thinks they're the weakest? And oh, you failed that. All of that for me was a bit, I didn't enjoy that side of it because yes, it mucked with your head. Like, I think I know what I'm capable of. I know what my strengths are. I know what my weaknesses are. I don't go on about them, but I don't use them as excuses either. And I think what SAS manages to do is pick away. It manages to find your Achilles heel. So that was kind of frustrating.
And painful as well. So tell us about kind of like day to day. So you grew up on the farm. Was kind of like exercise a thing for you then when you were little?
Yeah, but I think it wasn't, I mean, what would we do after school? Bike, ride to the river and then get in the river and splash about. What did we do on weekends? You know, played in the field, climbed on straw bales. I mean, God, I got caught climbing on the roof of the barn, which now when I look back in hindsight, that's the kind of childhood I had. So yeah, it was active without being, right, now we'll go to tennis and now we'll go to football.
Yeah. And what about now? So you got the boys. What about now? Do you focus on kind of getting out and doing your own exercise, or how do you deal with it?
Since lockdown, I have exercised more with the boys. So before, when they were at school, then I'd go for a run or go to the gym or whatever. But because obviously everyone's only been allowed to go out once a day, obviously I don't feel like I could say to the kids, you stay in, I'm going out for a run. So yeah, I've been doing a lot with the kids. But for me, I've used gym since 15. My brother plays football. I've always been brought up in a sporty family. But for me, I don't go to the gym to make my bum peachy. I go to make my head peachy. Like, sport and fitness has always been about how it makes me feel. If I'm stressy or aggy, my husband will be like, oh, just go for a run. At the minute, I'm trying to I'm just doing loads of kitchen discos with the kids. So I never have a routine because I feel like then it's a chore.
I mean, I love that, don't you, Lou? She doesn't go to the gym to make her bum peachy. She goes...
Look peachy.
Yeah, no, she goes to the gym to make her brain, her head peachy. I like that one.
I think we might have that as our byline, because that's exactly what we've been talking about over the last 10 weeks or so, isn't it, Annie? How it makes you feel, but not how it makes you look, actually, Helen. I think that's what we've been trying to kind of get to the bottom of.
But also, that just leads to disappointment. I mean, who doesn't love the way I've got a friend who does yoga. She's that classic, you think yoga, you think of my friend Becky. She's like 6'10", her legs go up to her armpits. Like, she's that, you know, that girl that puts on their boyfriend's t-shirt and they look like a supermodel. She's that girl. I did yoga for ages. I'm never going to look like Becky. Doesn't matter how much yoga I do. It's about my genetics. I think sometimes when you get obsessed with like, oh, I'm going to do this because gains. I'm not into gains. What the hell is that about? Let's gains. What? Let's just push up. That's just not for me. I mean, whatever works for you, fine. But I'm never going to be the person who's going to go and chuck a metal pole around to make my abs look ripped.
So what is next?
That's a good question. I think I need something because we've been so busy. Like, you know, this has all been going on. And I'm the kind of person who needs something to train for. And Lauren keeps trying to get me to do a triathlon. And I was like, yes.
Oh, come on.
I think, do you know what? I'm friends with the Brownlee brothers. My dad's best friend is like a ridiculously brilliant triathlete. One of the first, you know, I've got lots of triathlon connections. I've never done one. So I think I need to commit. And if I say it publicly, then maybe I'll do it.
Also, you're speaking to the wrong people here on so many levels, because I think you need to go and do one of the extreme triathlons. You need to go and do one of the ones where you jump off ferries into icy cold water, because that, for you, I promise you, will be what you want to do.
Right, okay, deal. That's the way I lay myself into these trouble, though. If I say it publicly, then I have to do it.
Because I just think that so much about you speaks of, you know, what seems to be plain is that you love the outdoors. That's what seems to speak to you, doesn't it?
And it was really interesting because Lockie, who, I mean, such a brilliant guy on so many levels, but we are from the polar opposite of worlds. And one of the things that we had to do was we had to build this survival shelter and catch a rabbit and skin a rabbit and cut it up and eat it. And Lockie had never built a den. And I was like, I spent the first 12 years of my life in a den, like pallets and twigs outside. So it was really funny because on the final day when we do the escape and evasion, we were on that ferry. You two would be proud. On the ferry, I found a bottle of whiskey and I was drinking the whiskey to set me up for escape and evasion. We were on that ferry and we were going across and there was this sensational, I don't know the name of the mountain, but sensational view. And I said to Lockie, you don't understand me because you don't understand what makes my heart sing. And I said, you know, music, how it gets you pumped and gets you going. This gets me pumped and gets me going. Being on the water, looking at a mountain, that weather, this to me is the equivalent of you being at a festival, getting an amazing beat to a rave. And he was like, oh, okay, I get it. So yeah, that's definitely what makes my heart sing.
And I guess, I mean, everyone is different. And I think that's really, you know, what makes, you know, the world go round. Talking with you, it's really interesting because we've touched on Blue Peter and how you got to be on the TV in the first place and all your amazing challenges and country file, presenting, swimming, etc. But so I'm interested in, you know, your journalism and also the fact that, yes, you do look like you're this adventure woman, but you can also be quite serious. So, you know, you're on Five Live. I heard you the other day. You're interviewing another politician about, you know what? And I was thinking, wow, you know, that's just so impressive, you know, because I think that's a tough job. So you're doing all this stuff for fun. But how do you handle the other side of your life where you are also open to a lot of criticism? I mean, Lou and I and Naga spoke about this on the last podcast we did. So, you know, it's not something I guess we have to go into great detail, but I guess, you know, it's not easy out there, is it, for a presenter, radio, TV, you know, with a journalist background?
Do you know what? I think I'd always go back to years and years and years ago. I don't know if you know David Law. He's a tennis, he's a journalist, does a lot of tennis. I'm sure you know him, Louise. He works on Five Live. He works on lots of different channels. And I was working on Blue Peter and obviously, you know, buzzing about long blonde hair extensions, rocked up at Wimbledon to work for Five Live for the first time. I've got like a polka dot dress, boob tube dress thing on. And I walked into the room and I think Louise probably knows who I'm talking about when I say we've got some colleagues who are very serious and take themselves very seriously. And so they should. And very, very different to me. And it was really difficult. And David Law took me to one side and he went, listen, Helen, you can't do what they do, but they can't do what you do. And it stuck with me. So I was like, you know what? He's right. Like, I don't need to try and be someone else. Like, I just need to know that I'm going to do what I can to the best of my ability. And some people don't like it. Of course they don't. And if people do like it, good for them. But as long as you're all right with it, then ultimately that's what it's about. I mean, yeah, we do this job, you get loads of criticism. But my brother is so funny because he's always like, if you want the praise, you've got to take the criticism. Don't come to me for sympathy if someone slags you off on Twitter because you take the praise. I'm like, all right. And he's got a point.
Do you though? Because I and we've talked about it before. Do you read both?
I don't read anything. And people don't think that that's a lie. I don't read anything.
Good.
Brilliant.
There is all that hoo-ha years ago about the shorts and the swimming and I covered the Olympics and the world got its knickers in a twist about a pair of shorts. People to this day, 4 years on, how do you feel about being victimized as a woman because of the pair of shorts? And I'm genuinely like, I only know what you're talking about because you keep talking about it to me. Like, if you're going to believe the hype, you've got to believe the criticism. So I genuinely don't indulge in any of it. The amount of times my friends come to me and go, oh, what did you say about this? I'm like, I don't know.
Do you know, we've talked about it on the podcast before. I kind of couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I try just to tune it out. Because you're right. You're absolutely right. If you're going to take, oh, Louise, that was a great interview, you also have to take the opposite. And actually, it just you just go around in circles.
And you people say, oh, I read it, but it doesn't affect me. It's impossible to say I read it and it doesn't affect me. It 100% affects everybody. So anybody who's listening to this and has made an innocent, slightly sarcastic comment on Twitter, that hurts people. So I believe if you haven't got anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And some of my colleagues laugh at me. It comes back to my brother's phrase, because I always make a point of like phoning my bosses after stuff's happened at work, bad stuff, but saying what's been good. And my boss at Countryfell would go, oh, but what? Yeah, but other people thought this, that, and that. I'm like, enough people tell you what went wrong. I'll tell you what was good.
I think, I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. I'm a glass half full. I always try and see the positive. And I mean, that's the only way I can operate, because otherwise you just, I don't know what would happen. I'm drinking too much rosé to even begin to think about it.
You'd unravel.
I'd unravel.
That was the scariest thing about SAS, because I was terrified of them unraveling me. Because I was a bit.
But like, you know, that is the reason why you'd have to persuade me put me in interrogation to be persuaded to go on it, because of that. So you did it even though you thought that.
And I think that's why I did it, because I think possibly going into it for the first time in my life, I did start to have that little dip of confidence. And I was like, no, I'm valuable. I've got a contribution to make. Like, and what you didn't see, like some of the mirror rooms, because you have more than one time in that interrogation room. And one time they went hell for leather into me, like, you're a manipulative woman and you play blokes off against each other. And I just cried. And I was like, I'm married to a sportsman. I've had my fill of manipulative women. I am not one of those women. And I was just like, I was terrified of them unpicking me and sort of making me, I don't know, the self-analysis. It's sometimes you're just like, I don't need to dwell on bad stuff. I just want to move forward.
So that was the original reason I wanted you on this podcast. So given all of what you've said over the last, whatever it is, 40 minutes or so, why would you go on that program?
Because I wanted the confidence boost. I wanted to know that I could. And I think I needed to know that I could. Like I needed to just remind myself what I was about. And it's funny because you're standing in there and of course, like, you have the utmost respect for those guys and what they've been through. But sometimes when they're like shouting and effing and jeffing, I was like, there's no need for so much. And I think that's what annoyed them sometimes, that they'd be like,
you're right. There is no need for the language. I think that might make me giggle.
But that's what kept making me giggle. And that's what they didn't like. And I think like Billy literally was like, he kept calling me Margot and driving Miss Daisy and all that. And I was like, why is that a bad thing? Like, why?
I'm not being funny though. I mean, those guys have been through a hell of a lot. Like, you know.
Oh, they're amazing. I don't want to take away from that because I have so much respect for them.
But I just still keep looking over like the 80 miles, the marathon in the Namibian desert, the solo journey, you know, 3,230 kilometres in a kayak on your own. I'm just thinking, God, you're bloody hardcore. You've got to be right up there with them, surely.
No, because what's funny, I think you know me well enough to know I'm not saying this with any hint of arrogance at all. I was just in a really lucky position on Blue Peter that I had the opportunity to try those things and push them, and I had the support from the team. You know, like that was my job. So, you know, I was very lucky. But what's funny is whenever you say, like, if anyone ever goes, oh, she's an adventurer, adventurers get their knickers in a twist and they're like, no, she's not. She hasn't done this, she hasn't done that. And I'm like, why do we even care? Why are we putting something into taking each other down? Why not just go, like I always say, I'm a person who made kids TV, and I made kids TV to try and excite kids about the world. That's what I did. I'm not an adventurer. I'm not a polo explorer. None of that. I'm not claiming to be any of that. But that's not better or worse than an adventurer.
You have been to the South Pole on a bike, right?
Yeah.
Just saying.
No, but honestly, people get so funny about it.
A really good friend of mine, who's a great triathlon commentator and writer, journalist, a guy called John Leveson, sent me a message when he knew we were chatting to you. Now, he is a mega boxing fan. He's a very switched on guy, knows a huge amount of boxing. And he said, he just said, she was amazing. Now, I've got to tell you, you don't know John Leveson, but that's big praise from a guy who actually does know a huge amount of boxing. So you were in the celebrity boxing program, weren't you? And he just said, where did she learn those skills? I mean, so we move on from kayaking and marathon, and now we're touching on boxing, which a lot of people wouldn't necessarily know about.
Bermentoft Boxing Gym took me to their heart, and they will say by themselves, that is quite a rough and ready boxing gym in Leeds. And if you know the gym or the, it's intense. And I was so lucky that Phil Sellers, and Phil is the most humble, down-to-earth man you could ever wish to meet, genuine salt of the earth guy. And you know when you watch boxing films and it's those stereotypical under the arches, people who've maybe had like difficult situations, being put through all this pain, and then they rise to the top. And that's exactly what the boxing community that I experienced was. The most hardworking, the most humble, just the biggest grafters ever. And it was one of the best things I've ever been part of. For about 8 weeks, Phil Sellers took me all over the country to train with female boxers. So it was celebrity boxing for Sports Relief, but the other people involved trained together in a gym in London, whereas I was being taken, my training partner was a European champion in Bradford. Like, but they were putting me in a ring with people who actually like win titles. So by the time I got to this celebrity version, I was well seasoned.
I mean, you were a proper scrapper. I mean, that's probably not a boxing term at all, but you were brilliant.
Well, because they put so much energy into getting me to do it. I didn't want to, because again, got a load of criticism afterwards, like, should women be boxing? Blah, blah, blah. Helen was too brutal. I signed up to do boxing. I didn't sign up to do ballet. And for me, it would have been disrespectful to do anything other than take it seriously. And I took it seriously. I dropped the weight like they needed me to do so that it was safe. As I say, I trained. I got all the sparring hours up. They took me to like an England girls boxing camp. Oh my God, I was terrified. And they were like, get in that ring, go on, spar. And you know, when you're like, I don't really want to, but okay. And it got to the point where the girls would say to me, if you don't hit me, that offends me. Like, this is boxing. So there was a girl from Hull, Natasha. She was in her 20s. She had a seven-year-old boy. She was working at the NHS. She was doing a full-time degree, learning to be a theatre nurse. And she was training every morning in the gym. And that, to me, is girl power.
Listen, it's absolutely wonderful to speak to you. You have something that we, you know, I envy, actually. It's the kind of bravery, the courage, the kind of get up and go, and the ability to just say yes. And, you know, for example, just that last story about boxing, just to go for it in a kind of serious way, but in a brilliant way.
Oh, well, back at you, because you do plenty yourselves. This is
Annie, what a pleasure, isn't it, to meet her?
It really is, Helen. It really is.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Take care, go back to your kiddies, and have a lovely weekend.
Lovely to talk to you.
Take care. Bye.
What an absolute joy to speak to Helen again. And actually, Annie, she met my daughter 11 years ago. And just before we started the podcast, I managed to reintroduce them. And that was so sweet.
Oh, lovely. And she's still so young, Helen, isn't she? She's achieved so much. You just think, oh, my goodness, when she's as old as us, what will she have achieved then?
Well, we know she's going to do some more. She's going to do triathlons by then. She is a pocket rocket and I love her. Thank you so much to everybody who's listening, who's subscribing. This is from Donna from London. She says, I first listened to you, Louise and Annie, on the tripod. Remember that? I'm so happy to find you here on the Her Spirit podcast. It's a great listen and it's inspiring and informative. I highly recommend it. Donna, thank you very much. If you have a moment, you're still listening, leave us a review and a rating because it helps other people find us.
And a lovely message as well from Jackie, who says, I really love listening to you, Louise and Annie. Oh, thank you, Jackie. It's like being in the kitchen with friends. The guests are fun and interesting. If you haven't already, subscribe now to the Her Spirit app.
And basically, you are in the kitchen with friends. Where are you today? I'm not in the kitchen, actually. I'm in my kind of makeshift gym. Where are you, Annie?
I'm in the room that is now a combined office and playroom. So Tim's in here all day long. God bless him. He's working hard. I'm in here now. And the rest of the time, it's TV and junk. And it's got messier and messier over the last 10 weeks. And I don't care.
We just don't care. I'm not good. Do you know what? We mentioned the washing. Stuff it.
Stuff all of
it. It's going to still be there tomorrow, isn't it?
We've got a glass of wine. We're fine.
Listen, finish the rosé. It's been an absolute pleasure. Take care. Speak to you next week. Lots of love.
Love, love. Bye.
Hi, my name's Mel Burry and I'm the co-founder of Her Spirit. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast and we hope you found it useful. I'd just like to say thanks to our sponsors, MediChex, who without their support, this wouldn't have been possible. MediChex offers simple to use blood tests. Wanting to strengthen your immunity or check for underlying conditions, they offer a home test with doctor's reviewed results. Just go to medichex.com to find out more. And remember, together we've got this. Have a great day.